This is WSBT's Community Update on 96.1 WSBT.
Good morning. I'm John Hoffman. 16,000 students got some very good news this week. Both South Bend schools' referendum questions passed with solid majorities.
District leaders and their supporters have to be very happy right now. South Bend schools have passed their $220 million proposal.
South Bend School Superintendent Todd Cummings' first reaction to the news? All the people he has to thank. The school board, the volunteers, and the voters who helped pass the district's first ever attempt at a referendum. And he thinks he knows how it passed.
I believe it was the voters who listened, who asked extraordinary questions, who came out to talks with Todd, who came to board meetings.
In terms of measurable data, the thing South Bend has going for it was a short list. It was smart to attempt the referendum now because historically, May referenda pass at a higher percentage than November referenda. But the list of things working against South Bend, that's much longer.
As an economist, I tend to think that recessions and incomes and prices should matter, and they didn't.
Larry DeBoer is an expert in state referenda. According to DeBoer, negatives South Bend faced include the current economic recession, referenda data from over the past three elections, the fact that coronavirus limited in-person campaigning, the fact that it was South Bend's first attempt, that South Bend was asking voters for more than 25 cents for every $100 in assessed value in property taxes. The list goes on and on. But DeBoer says sometimes the data can't account for everything.
There are always local issues and local circumstances that you can't get measurements for or that cannot be measured.
Stuart Green is a member of the South Bend School Board. He has some ideas for what may have tipped the scales.
It mattered as well that the superintendent was out giving talks. It really called attention to the fact that this was a kind of grassroots activist approach to, getting people committed to the schools.
Green says there are a few things he's hoping to tackle right away. District-wide preschool, literacy coaching for K through second graders, improving social and emotional learning, and much-needed building updates.
WSBT 22's Tolly Taylor reporting. Tuesday's primary elections resulted in St. Joseph County District 2 Commissioner Dave Thomas losing his re-election bid. Former City Councilman Oliver Davis defeated Thomas for the Democratic nomination. Davis will face another former council member, Republican Derek Teeter, in the November general election. Election results also show that Maureen Bauer will succeed her father, 50-year legislative veteran Pat Bauer, as District 6 state representative. She won a crowded Democratic primary. Her father is retiring. There's no Republican in the race, so she wins the seat automatically. Now, some audio of what went on last weekend in downtown South Bend as two peaceful protests Saturday over the death of an unarmed black man in Minneapolis wound their way through downtown South Bend to the police department.
What happened to George Floyd was terrible, it's been happening for way before I was born. I'm 23 now. My granddad marched with Martin Luther King. It's bad. I'm out here to support the Black Lives Matter movement. Nothing against anybody else of any other race. We're not trying to be violent out here. But I just want to give an example of how to do a peaceful protest and get everybody together. I've never seen this many people together without being violent.
Minorities, they should get treated equally because, like, if it did get talked about it the right way, we wouldn't have to be standing out here on the sidewalk trying to get people's attention to understand that it's not right.
We need to think more than just of ourselves. We need to think of other people too. We need to think about the way they feel, the way that they're treated. Like, they can be denied rights. They can be denied to go places.
Right now, there's a lot of people out here, but it could be more. There's not a lot of people that care. We got to figure out a way to make more people care.
Enough is enough. Enough is enough. Enough is enough.
It makes me proud, most definitely of South Bend.
Shout with me, say enough is enough.
Similar protests last Sunday stayed peaceful in Benton Harbor in Michigan City. The South Shore Line suspended service completely on Monday because of continuing protests in Chicago. As business reopenings continue and activities expand, St. Joseph County is seeing a modest increase in coronavirus cases. The Health Department's Dr. Mark Fox joined WSBT 22's First in the Morning on Monday to talk about where we are.
Dr. Mark Fox with the St. Joseph County Health Department is here. Thanks for being with us today. Usually we ask you right off the top here that how do we stand locally? We've had restaurants and retail open now for a couple of weeks. We've been able to get a little bit better handle on how things are going, how they're handling it, how the community is handling it as well. How are we doing?
Yeah, we've seen a slight uptick in cases here in St. Joseph County. Not dramatic, but it is an increase from the baseline of where we'd been in the last few weeks in April. So it's about what we expected. In terms of hospital capacity, we're in good shape. Actually, our hospital numbers had been the best we've seen in 2 months, probably about a week ago, and have gradually ticked up a little bit since then as well.
So I would assume that hospitalization, since that's generally okay, ICU availability is also not a problem.
Yeah, so hospital capacity and ICU capacity right now, we're fine here. I know in Elkhart County and Goshen, they've been a little more challenged in that regard.
Yeah, so let's talk about that for a moment. Goshen specifically has seen a bit of an uptick, more so compared to the rest of Elkhart County. And Goshen obviously has a higher percentage of Latino population. We also saw a bit of a hot spot on the west side of South Bend with a higher propensity of Latino population. Is there a correlation there?
I suspect there is. I think there are a couple of factors that contribute to that. One is, you know, people of color are disproportionately represented among the essential workers who have been working for the last 2 or 3 months all along, while some others have been able to work remotely. So they've been on the front lines throughout. Many in the Hispanic community are living in multi-generational households. So we've, at least in St. Joseph County, we saw a number of households where, you know, multiple people were infected. The reports I've heard are it's been a similar experience in Elkhart County as well.
Okay. One of the issues that we have been seeing, and this is along the people of color, we have seen early on that the mortality rate was a little higher with African Americans. We're seeing now many of these protests on the street calling for justice. This is strictly a medical question. This is not a political or a sociological question. This is strictly a medical question. Are you concerned about all of these protests and the people gathering so tightly, even though they're outdoors, gathering in a mass situation during the middle of this pandemic?
Yeah, so any crowd is certainly concerned. The footage I've seen both locally and nationally, I've also seen more people wearing masks at the rallies or protests than I have in the hardware stores. So, you know, I think the people that are concerned about racial justice are not the ones voicing concerns about wearing masks.
Yeah.
So let's keep our fingers crossed and hope that they stay safe in that regard.
Okay. We heard from the CDC last week that the general way to get the coronavirus is through person-to-person contact, and perhaps not as much as the surface contact is what was originally thought to be the case. Is that your belief as well now? Have you seen more information that perhaps it's not as much of a surface issue, and maybe we're not telling people not to wash their hands. Obviously, you have to wash your hands. But maybe you shouldn't have to be quite as worried about wiping down everything and using hand sanitizer constantly, et cetera.
You know, I think this falls into the bucket of things we still don't know enough about. I'm not sure why the CDC changed that language. We know that the virus survives on surfaces. We don't know whether it survives in enough of a dose to make you sick. There is certainly no harm to disinfecting surfaces. Obviously, hand washing is important. Cough etiquette is really important. And physical distancing, those are the most important measures. But still, for now, my recommendation is continue the disinfection protocols on surfaces that we've been recommending for the last several months.
It's kind of like the mask. Whether you think it works or you think it doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt at all.
Okay. Wanted to ask you as well about the gyms. I've gone back to the gym and I've seen people wearing masks and I've seen people not wearing masks. Is there a protocol if you go back to the gyms now that they've been open for a week roughly that you should or should not be doing when you're at the gym to keep yourself and the people around you safe?
So as I said, you know, physical distancing is probably the most important measure. In normal conversation, we think 6 feet is fine. Anything that makes you grunt or huff or puff, you know, whether it's singing in the choir Working out at the gym, if you're lifting weights and you're grunting, you're going to propel droplets with more force than in normal conversation. So likely we'll go farther than 6 feet. You know, if you could ensure that the range of your droplets is all disinfected when you're done and there's nobody in that vicinity, it could be done safely without a mask. But there are so many caveats embedded in that that still the safest thing is to protect other people is to wear a mask. And obviously if you're doing high intensity workouts and cardio stuff, that can be challenging. Take that outside.
Yeah. Good idea. We're just about out of time. Wanted to ask you one quick question about testing availability. We're still seeing some clinics and tests are much more readily available. Are we to the point, or should we soon be to the point, where anybody who wants a test can get the test, whether they have symptoms or not?
You know, honestly, we're not there yet. Our clinicians locally have a lot of discretion as to who to test. But we're really at kind of a sweet spot right now that I think the people who need to be tested are getting tested, and we're getting test results back in a reasonable time frame. If we were to overwhelm with the number of tests, then our resulting would be delayed. And so it really is a balance until we have increased processing capacity. That's really our sticking point, I think.
Deputy Health Officer Dr. Mark Fox of the St. Joseph County Health Department on WSBT 22's First in the Morning. 8 Mishawaka firefighters tested positive for COVID-19 over the last 10 days, according to Chief Byron Woodard. The South Bend Tribune reports Union President Mark Ryan says 2 firefighters had a fever and mild symptoms a week ago Friday. He says the entire department was tested on Monday after the positive tests were confirmed. Chief Woodward said the department first tested the 2 firefighters, then those who worked with them, before deciding to test the entire department. He says the department is working with the health department on tracing the contacts of each firefighter that tested positive. There are currently over 1,300 confirmed cases of coronavirus in St. Joseph County. Americans have been watching and cheering on SpaceX and their journey into space last weekend. It's also caused a lot of excitement for students wanting to go to the Digital Video Theater and Planetarium in Mishawaka. It's currently closed for the rest of the summer. The director of the planetarium says she can't wait to open, especially to teach students about this space mission and also to inspire them to follow their dreams.
SpaceX made history with the first launch at a U.S. space station in almost a decade. Melinda O'Malley is the director of the Penn Harris Madison Digital Video Theater and Planetarium. She says it's such an exciting time in history, yet has to be away from her students.
It's been hard being away when you know there's so much going on and people are so excited about this, and you have a perfect venue to welcome that excitement, and well, you can't be there.
O'Malley describes the planetarium as a hidden gem, providing shows and a museum for PHM students and the public. She said she's seen a lot of students around her neighborhood and has been receiving a lot of messages on social media about a lot of kids excited to come to the planetarium once it opens again.
The idea of SpaceX right now brings a real tangible goal and excitement and a reality to space. And the fact that students now could possibly walk on the moon or travel to Mars. It's not just a sci-fi.
O'Malley says there's even more excitement that a 1997 Penn High School graduate, John Edwards, is currently working on the SpaceX mission. She hopes that once they open, the planetarium can inspire more kids to follow their dreams.
The STEM field is exploding all the time, and wherever that leads and whatever we can do to excite students and highlight those opportunities for them to be able to learn, well, that's where we're going to head, and that's what we're going to do.
The PHM Planetarium is for students in the district and in the community. O'Malley says they're hoping to open in the fall, but are waiting for guidance from the district.
WSBT 22's Erica Finke reporting.
The views expressed on WSBT's Community Update are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, WSBT Radio, its staff, or management. Join us again next week on Community Update on the Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT.